Welcome to Holistic Wellness, a podcast exploring the science and metaphysics of health and wellness. I'm your host, Brandi Searcy, founder and formulator at Rain Organica, where you'll find holistic skincare in one simple routine. In today's episode, we're talking through how Rain Organica got B Corp certification. And specifically, what we're focusing on today is the sustainability practices here at Rain Organica. The reason why we're doing this is because this, I think, will help you as a consumer understand where brands are coming from when they are clean skincare, eco-conscious skincare, green skincare. Like, this goes beyond the marketing. This is what's going on the backside of that. And of course, you as a savvy consumer know that it's not enough merely to look at the front label of a skincare product and decide based on, you know, the jargon there, whether a company is truly clean, sustainable, and green. So it's all coming down to the ingredients list. It's all coming down to what's going on behind the scenes during making those ingredients, and honestly, even in procuring those ingredients. So that's why we're having this conversation today, to give you a little behind the scenes look. This is peeling back the curtain of what it means to be truly sustainable in the realm of skincare. So here at Rain Organica, I really practice a seed to consumer view of sustainability. And what this means is that the ingredients that I'm using here at Rain Organica didn't arrive from the ether, right? Like, I didn't conjure these up. I actually purchased them and had them shipped to me. And because of that, that means these ingredients were all grown somewhere. And really, when we're talking about skincare, and when we're talking specifically about clean skincare, there are three ways that ingredients are made. So the first way is ingredients are made with minimal processing. What this looks like is things like botanical oils. So botanical oils typically are, when we're talking clean skincare, they are pressed from the fruit in order to get the oil. So here we're talking, you may think olive oil, you may think argan oil. So it's pressed from the nut. The nut itself is pressed and the oil is expelled. This is why it's known as expeller pressing. To give you a little bit of an idea, because you likely have heard of the term cold pressed is the act of expeller pressing where the temperature is controlled. Because what happens is that during expeller pressing, this is often, you can think of two really heavy plates. And it's really cool. There's actually some images over at Rain Organica with old-timey manual expeller pressing. And this is where you would take, this is where two large concrete wheels are placed, and people would actually turn a crank to move that wheel on top. So the bottom wheel stays stationary, your olives are placed in between the two plates, and then the top wheel is lowered, and people would actually crank that top wheel to move it around and crush the olives, and this would expel the oil. And then it's the way that it's angled, it's so that the oil is then collected in a basin below the expeller. So what happens during that, you may imagine, is that you get a lot of friction. You've got two big concrete plates turning on each other, so you're generating a ton of friction. And in that process, friction, of course, produces heat. So cold pressing with some of these highly labile oils, like pumpkin seed oil, evening primrose oil, ones that have high quantity or a high concentration of PUFAs. So those are those polyunsaturated fatty acids. Those are extremely sensitive to heat. And so you want cold pressed, which implies expeller pressed with, again, temperature control. So there's also another way that oils can be collected, and this is with solvent extraction. This is not something that We do not use solvent extracted oils here at Rain Organica. Any clean skincare brand will not use solvent extracted oils. They will use either cold pressed or expeller pressed. Solvent extraction typically involves the solvent hexane in order to extract the oils, and then that hexane is removed through some kind of solvent removal process to leave behind the oil. Now, the problem with solvent extraction is you always have a little bit of residual hexane or residual solvent because it's not always hexane, it's just often hexane. And you don't want to be eating that. You don't want to be putting that on your skin. So that is minimal processing. The other minimally processed ingredients used here at Rain Organica are herbs. And here I'm talking amla, so that's synonymous with Indian gooseberry. Amla is beginning to become beginning to get in the limelight. It is an Ayurvedic herb. It contains like the highest concentration of natural vitamin C on the planet. Indian madder root is another one. Let's see, what? Why am I drawing a blank here? Guiduchi, which is Indian moon seed. There are several others as well. Alodra is another one used here at Rain Organica. So all of those would be minimally processed. And that is literally taking the herb and grinding it into a fine powder, or just taking the herb and grinding it, but maybe not necessarily pulverizing it into a fine powder, but rather leaving it, partially intact. So you can think of like mint leaves, but they're all exactly the same size. So whatever kind of processing that looks like, and it's just kind of homogenizing or uniformly chopping the herb to make it all the same size. And then, of course, it's dried before whatever pulverizing technique is used, whether that's powderization or whether it's large particle. There's one more category of ingredients that have minimal processing, and this is hydrosols. Hydrosols are also known as distillates. They're sometimes even referred to as floral waters. And I've done an entire podcast episode before on the real difference between floral waters and distillates, and there is a difference. Maybe it only matters if, it probably only matters if you're super geeky like me. But anyways, you'll find that linked in today's show notes. And essentially, in short, the difference is that for distillates, you are distilling off the essence of the plant material. So here, let's just talk rose hydrosol, because I think that's the one that people are most familiar with. So rose distillate, rose hydrosol, those are synonymous. You take the rose buds or the rose petals, and I actually steam through them. And what you're doing is collecting that steam, and that's pulling over the essence of the roses. And this is also the same way that you make essential oils. And in fact, hydrosols are a byproduct of essential oil creation. So essentially, what you're doing as you're passing the steam through, you're pulling off the volatile component. So these are the fragrance notes. These are all of the, I'm at a lack, like I wish that I could think of a proper synonym for volatile, all of the volatile components of those rose petals, of those rose buds. And then what's happening is the water soluble ones of those stay with the steam that condenses into your collection vessel. And the oil soluble ones of those actually separate on top as the essential oil. Now, a floral water, by contrast, is often not distilled through, but made with. So it's not necessarily the distillate that you're collecting. It's that you place these rose buds in a pot with water, let it stew. Probably not steam for a certain amount of time, and then pull off your rose buds and toss those, and then keep the water. So it's subtle difference. So that's another ingredient that is minimally processed. So what did we just talk about? We talked about botanical oils being minimally processed. We talked about herbs themselves being minimally processed. And then we talked about hydrosols. So this is one way that ingredients are made. Now, the question with all of that is, well, that's making the ingredient. You want to take a step further back and think, okay, where are all of these grown and how are they grown? Are those roses that are used for the rose hydrosol, are they grown organically? Are the argan nuts that are used for that argan oil, are they collected in a fair trade manner? Are they fair for life? Are they also organic? The same all the way through that evening primrose oil, where's it grown? How's it harvested? The whole gambit. So this is something that I take into consideration. It's not just are the oils grown sustainably, or are the is the crop grown sustainably? Because we could again be talking about roses or even cucumber hydrosol. Or even aloe, is all of that grown sustainably? Is all of it grown organically? And then the third question is, where is it grown? And fourthly, how is it harvested? Again, this goes back to that fair trade, fair for life. These other are the people that are, have their hands in the harvest. Are they paid a living wage? So that's all things that I consider when selecting ingredients. And then the other thing is, where are these ingredients grown? Because when we think about shipping is a huge concern, and it leaves a huge carbon footprint. So this is why you'll see that I love Metafoam seed oil, because it's grown right here in the Pacific Northwest, and I'm right here in Southern California. So the shipping footprint and the shipping distance, the carbon footprint from shipping, is a lot smaller than, say, something that's grown in Australia, like sandalwood, or than shea butter or argan nut or argan oil, because most of the time that's grown, those two crops are grown in Africa. And so this is a consideration. Now, does that mean that Rainer Ginica doesn't use argan oil or shea butter? No, it doesn't. It just means that, when I'm thinking about a formulation, it's really thinking about what the oil itself brings in terms of its botanical oil, in terms of its fatty acid composition, thinking about the nutrients within that oil. So oils are so much more than just their fatty acid composition. They also bring in things like antioxidants, like, vitamin E, oil-soluble antioxidants like vitamin E, vitamin A. They're bringing in these phytosterols and other carotenoids besides just vitamin A. So it's, what does the full composition of the botanical oil look like? What is that imparting into the product? And is there a comparable botanical oil that's grown closer, or a comparable botanical oil that would work, especially when coupled with a different botanical oil? So there's lots of thought going into all of these products. And I think that's another key thing for you to take away from this episode is, I've done all that thinking for you. I've done all of that obsessing to the point, and over-obsessing for all of these ingredients and all of these products, and bringing all of these ingredients together, done all of that for you, so you don't have to. You get to enjoy the simple routine that Rain Organica offers. So I think that's all that I want to say on minimal processing. Moving on, the second way that ingredients are made, at least the ones that we use here at Rain Organica, are biofermentation. So, what ingredients are biofermented? Well, oftentimes, this is actually some of the clean preservatives like lactobacillus ferment. It is also Hyaluronic acid. Hyaluronic acid is a biofermented ingredient. With this, because we're relying on bacteria to make the ingredient, it's a much cleaner process than it would be if it were chemically made. Because in a biofermentation, you're dealing with water, you're not dealing with solvents. And the difference between the two, just for full disclosure here, everything you come into contact with on a daily basis pretty much is a chemical. Water is a chemical. Chemical is synonymous with molecule. There are biochemical processes going on all the time within your body. So things like glutamine, things like vitamin C, those are all chemicals. So what differentiates water, when we're talking water, from solvents is solvents or are organic compounds that typically are oil extractors. So they pull off oil. So water, you've got kind of two classes of molecules. You've got water-loving molecules and you've got oil-loving molecules. And solvents are things that most of the time are going to extract or pull out those oily compounds. So that, we talked about that a little bit when we were talking about solvent extraction versus expeller extraction or expeller pressing of oils. But the way that it arises here, like when we're talking about why is biofermentation cleaner than something that's chemically made, is because when you're chemically making something, oftentimes you are using these solvents. And so this could be something like isopropyl alcohol, so IPA, so rubbing alcohol, could be something like ethanol, so even drinking alcohol. It could be something much more sinister like methylene chloride, which not only is a known carcinogen, and so we come back to that residual solvent level of how much does it have there, and is it at quote unquote safe levels according to FDA standards? Or the other question, the other side of the coin is, where the hell is all of that methylene chloride going after you processed it? Well, it's going ultimately into the environment. I mean, yes, there are scrubbers and all of this kind of thing to remove it. But remove it for what? Well, to ultimately be disposed of. So somehow you're either generating CO2 from it by burning it, which you're not burning a halogenated solvent. That's what fire retardants are made out of. Or you're putting it back into the environment somehow. You can process it all you want. Somehow it's going back into the environment as waste, as fumes, as pollution. So, anyways, this is why biofermentation is so much cleaner. Now, processing, the third way that ingredients are made is through processing. Now, here, there's all kinds of ways you can process ingredients. There's the hardcore chemical processing that I was just talking about. There's also much gentler processing techniques. And here, certain compounds, certain ingredients, you can't just buy, they don't just come straight from a field. You can't just press them from a plant. And here, specifically, what I'm talking about is emulsifiers. So any of your, and thickeners. So any of your fatty acid thickeners, so cetyl alcohol, cetyl alcohol, sterile alcohol, there's a whole class of other ill alcohols like YL alcohols. All of those are essentially a long fatty acid chain with a polar head group, and you have to make that somehow. And this is with the processing. So this is where the different certifications come in. This is also where my background comes in. Now, a lot of people might think, so I am formally trained as a chemical engineer, and a lot of people might think that training allows me to figure out how a compound is made. It's actually not my training as a chemical engineer. Turns out, as a chemical engineer, mostly what you're trained in is the heat generated from a reaction and how to dispel that heat. So it's how big do you need to make your heat exchanger for this chemical process so you don't blow the place up. Now, the training that that I have that allows me to take a look at a final compound and figure out, how it was made is actually my training as a synthetic organic chemist. And with this, I think this ultimately is kind of why I'm so, it's kind of why I am the way I am, even when we're talking health, is because unlike biochemistry, where it's all about memorization and all about, memorizing the different structures of the amino acids, memorizing the Krebs cycle, memorizing the ATP cycle and citric acid cycle, and all of these different cycles and the enzymes associated with each one, with organic chemistry, instead, yes, you may have hundreds of different mechanisms, but ultimately it's all about moving electrons around. How did these two molecules react with each other, maybe in a presence of a catalyst, maybe not, in order to form this third molecule? So, really good synthetic organic chemist. And I happen to know several of them. So, when I get stumped, I go to them. And one in particular is a resident here within the household. Anyways, really good synthetic organic chemist can look at the molecular structure of a compound and figure out what the starting material was. And again, this is also where not only my training as an organic chemist, but also the fact that I am a research scientist, I'm able to go and cross-check myself and be sure that, what I think is the starting materials to make the final compound, it actually is. It's actually pretty easy to find out the manufacturing process for lots of different compounds, just in some basic Google research. Now, the other thing, when we're talking processing, when we're talking chemical processing, this is where different certification standards come in. So this is where there's something known as REACH in the EU, which ultimately really has to do more with the final molecule itself rather than the processing. This is a whole standard where the EU government is working to reduce consumer exposure to things like phthalates and other known endocrine disruptors. And so REACH has been implemented in Europe. It also applies to the processing because if these compounds are used in processing above, and the company is big enough so they're processing a certain amount of year, then that needs to get disclosed as well. So REACH is one of them. Ones that are kind of more familiar in the cosmetic space are EcoCert and Cosmos certification. Now, with this, what I'm talking about is the ingredients themselves are EcoCert and Cosmos certified. So oftentimes, as the consumer, you don't have visibility into this unless you know how the company itself is making these products, because it's not, or what ingredients the company is using to make the final product, because the final product itself isn't certified. Now, with Cosmos, you can get a Cosmos certification. I'm going to be upfront with you. Rain Organica products don't have any kind of certification on them because certification is hella expensive. And I mean, it's just not something that most small businesses are willing to put the cash into to get these certifications. And just to give you an idea, just to get B Corp certified, it was a year-long process. And I spent a lot of time and energy in that process. And it's not something I'm looking to repeat as a sole employee. So anyways, where was I going with this? Processing EcoCert. So with EcoCert, EcoCert has been around for 30 years. It is a it arose out of France or is a France certification. And with this, they are looking at sustainable practices in the manufacturing process itself. So EcoCert ingredients apply to the emulsifiers that Rain Organica uses. So this would be things like glycerol monostearate or which is also synonymous with glycerol stearate. This would be the same with the let's see, is it, I believe it's, I'm drawing a blank on the name right now. I think it's sauteryl olivate and maybe a different alcohol olivate is the last part of that. Maybe like sterol olivate. I'm almost positive it's sauteryl or no, cetyl. Anyways, one, olivate is the last part of it. I think it's sauteryl olivate. And I'm drawing a blank on the other emulsifier. You'll find a full list. You'll find a link in today's show notes over to the ingredients here at Rain Organica. Tried to do a good job of specifying whether these ingredients are EcoCert, Cosmos, or the other classification of this is Whole Foods Acceptable Premium Preservative List. So this is, this applies to preservatives. Cosmos is another certification organization for both ingredients and products this time, and it really looks at ingredients that, like, the organic origin of these ingredients. Are they certified organic? It looks at sustainability practices in growing, and also in the product life cycle, if it is a product. And it, there's actually four criteria. Green chemistry is another one, and trying to blank on the fourth one. So that is, that summarizes kind of the three big categories of the way that ingredients are made. When we are talking processing and chemical processing, this also applies to ingredients that are thoxylated. So you, if you ever hear the term thoxylated, what this is ethylene oxide is a gas. It's a very reactive gas. It's often used in, it's used frequently in the pharma industry for sterilizing things because it is so reactive. So this ethylene oxide, if it hits a microbe of any sort, it's going to destroy it with the energy that is contained in that ethylene oxide gas. It is an amazing like catalyst in chemical processes. And so it's used oftentimes in polymerization, specifically for things like PEG. It's also used in a number of other chemical processes. So now, needless to say, Rain Organica steers clear of any emulsifiers that are made using a thoxylation. I think that's the last thing that I wanted to say about that. So, kind of in summary, this is just going back to a little bit of this is like for organ for eco-conscious brands, they will be using EcoCert ingredients or some other kind of sustainability or eco-conscious certification ingredients. So whether this is EcoCert plus the Whole Food Acceptable Premium Preservative List, plus Cosmos certified ingredients, any of that, oftentimes products that are sold in Europe, and the US, you have to be a little bit careful because sometimes there are two different formulations sold in each countries. Generally, it gives you an extra degree of assurance that they're REACH compliant, especially if it's coming from a big company. However, please don't walk away with just because a company doesn't sell in Europe doesn't mean their ingredients aren't clean. Because the other thing from a skincare and from a cosmetics perspective is that every country has different regulations for what's required to sell within those countries. And for Rain Organica, for instance, I only sell in the US because I'm only compliant with US laws. Like I haven't registered with Canadian Health Authority. I haven't registered with EU Health Authority, because with all of these, despite, again, the misinformation that the cosmetics industry isn't regulated, it is in fact regulated. It's regulated by FDA. It's just the regulation for skincare looks a lot different than it does with the regulation for food or drugs. So, but I still have to comply with FDA regulations and FDA guidelines. even with skincare. And it's the same way with these other countries. Canadian Health Authority, they require that you register before you start selling in Canada. Europe, I don't know. To be honest, Europe, I don't know what the regulation looks like because I haven't looked at expanding into that. Because again, I am just one person. And this ultimately isn't that high on my priority list. Like, I'd rather just focus on sales in the US and grow, a solid customer base here first, grow the company up to be able to ultimately launch in Europe and Canada. But I feel like here in the US, we are at a disadvantage because we don't have all of these additional laws that they do, especially in EU, to help protect us as consumers. And so it really, I know I've fallen victim to the marketing jargon before because it's easy to do. Like, you read something, you're in a hurry, you're in a store, and you just want something that's like good and quality. And it's really easy to read the front label. It's sometimes easy to flip over and like read everything that the ingredients list. Sometimes it's easy to read the ingredients list and you miss over like these three ingredients that you would never use on your skin. And you walk out of the store with it and you open it up and you're like, oh my gosh, this, like, I just put it on, my skin's already reacting, or I just put it on and oh my gosh, it has like synthetic fragrance in it. So it's tough. I mean, it's really tough as a consumer. And so that's why ultimately I thought that this would be a good episode to just kind of peel back the curtain a little bit and share with you, what's going on kind of behind the scenes? What's even going into the ingredients? What's going into your skincare? What's going into this gorgeous product that ultimately you're using, or oftentimes not so gorgeous, but the packaging is pretty product that you're using. And to help you make a better decision, a more conscientious decision as a consumer. Feel free to reach out to me. Like, if anything in this conversation didn't make any sense, please feel free to reach out to me. Again, want to make it clear that I do not consider myself an organic chemist expert, but my husband is. So again, whenever I get stumped in looking at in looking at the molecular structure, the chemical drawing of a molecule, and I'm like, I don't know how they made this. He can spend about 20 seconds and be like, well, I'm pretty sure they did this, I'm pretty sure these two things were their starting material, and it was this kind of process. So, and then, I go and further research that, and 99.9% of the time he's right. So, anyways, just wanted to make that clear that you don't have to be an expert in anything, in everything. It's all about knowing who to turn to. And let's see. Oh, and also, the last thing that I didn't distinguish is the difference between when we say organic and we're talking certified organic, and when we say organic chemistry. Because this is something I didn't go over, and I don't want you to walk away confused by this. So, organic chemistry, if you have a science-based degree, you likely took organic chemistry. It was likely a required course in college, because this is often a quote unquote weed class. It's used to weed out, oftentimes it's used to weed out pre-med students. It's intense. It's a different way of thinking. It's, again, going back to that, you can't memorize organic chemistry in the same way that you can memorize biochemistry, because it is all about understanding these core concepts of how electrons move. And when we say organic in that context, when we're talking organic chemistry, what it applies to is anything containing a carbon atom. So, organic versus inorganic. Inorganic, a lot of times, is dealing with metals when we're talking in the chemistry space. So, anything that is contains life, of course, is at least here on planet Earth, is carbon-based. All solvents, with the exception of water, are also carbon-based. So, again, when I was talking about hexane, when I was talking about methylene chloride, talking about alcohol, whether that's ethanol, the kind that you drink, or rubbing alcohol, isopropyl alcohol, all of those are carbon-based solvents. So, I think that may be the last thing I wanted to say, was just, I didn't want you to walk away with thinking that organic chemistry is synonymous with certified organic. It's not. It's using that word organic in two very different contexts, talking about two very different things. Let's see. Next time on the podcast, this episode kind of kicks off our sustainability series. And next time on the podcast, I will be having a conversation with Frederica Siren. She is the author of Zero Waste Gardening, Zero Waste Living. She has a zero waste family right here in San Diego County. So I'll be talking with her next time. And then to round out this particular series, I'll be talking with Liz Murphy of Santosha Nutrition and also of Sustainability is Sexy. And I would also, as part of this, I'm going to do a throwback to an episode that I recorded a couple of years ago with the founder of Sustainable Harvest International. Now, this is the other piece of Rain Organica's. This is the other piece, major piece of why Rain Organica was able to get B Corp certification. And that is because we give to Sustainable Harvest International. Because giving a brand's giving strategy and their giving policies are like the key part of getting that B Corp certification. And you have to commit to giving a certain percentage of either revenue stream or of profit to an organization. So Sustainable Harvest International, again, is why is the organization that Rain Organica, one of the organizations that Rain Organica gives to, is the one that I publicize the most because it is most aligned with our brand mission. Yes, I also give to Adobe, like Rain Organica also gives to Adobe Rescue. That is separate, may not align with brand mission, doesn't mean I'm about to stop giving to Sunshine and to Bill and Sunshine Adobe Rescue. So, anyways, that is all for today's episode. If you learn something, if you think that this would, somebody else might like to listen to this episode, take a quick second and share this with them. As always, thank you so much for listening. Before you go, it would mean the world to me if you take just a quick second and leave a 5-star review. It really helps to spread the word about this podcast. And until next time, bye.